uniform of a colonel of the Galactic Alliance Guard, stood outside the lobby of the Republica building, flanked by Sergeant Warut and Trooper Lim. It was a real shame about Lakoff. He was a great loss. Ben had done well, but he should have been back at work right away. Jason planned to talk to Shivu later about sending Ben on leave without clearing it with him first.
"You sure this is going to be enough, sir?" asked Warut. "Just three of us?"
Jason smoothed his black gloves down over his fingers. It was 1 minute past midnight, and that made what he was about to do thoroughly legal, justified, and overdue. "I don't think Chief Omos has a platoon up there somehow." Warut didn't reply. Jason was the first to admit that going to arrest the elected head of the most powerful organization in the galaxy with a couple of troopers was low-key. But he saw no point flooding the area with an entire company. Omos wouldn't put up a fight. If he did, one Jedi and two armed troopers were ample to deal with it. Jason opened the comlink to Nihithol. "We're in position now," he said. "We're going in."
"I have an emergency appointment with Senator Gasil in 10 minutes. He's not happy about it, but I told him it couldn't wait."
"He's got no inkling of what's happening?"
"If he has, he hasn't shown the slightest sign of acting upon it."
"Okay. There's no going back now. We're committed."
"Just do it."
The security guard on the front reception was a man used to seeing all kinds of uniforms wandering in and out of Republica House. The luxurious tower housed the elite of the GA, and every senator seemed to have his or her own entourage of bodyguards as well as military visitors. Most Coruscanti knew what a GAG uniform looked like by now anyway. Jason had made sure his secret police were anything but secret, at least in terms of their existence, but he gave the guard proper identification without being asked. There was no point being rude or throwing his weight around. The man was only doing his job. "No need to announce me," Jason said. The guard checked his data pad.
"You're on his admission list anyway. Go on up."
It took minutes for the turbolift to reach Omos's floor. As the cab climbed, the two troopers simply stared at the wall ahead of them. Jason felt their reluctance and wanted to know if it was due to a fondness for Omos or a distaste for military coups. But he didn't ask. Any army that liked the idea of a coup wasn't worth having. It had to be the last resort.
"How the other half lives,"
Warut said as the turbolift doors opened onto a lobby of extraordinary luxury. The air was perfumed, a pleasantly neutral woody scent, and the broad corridor was lined with niches filled with rare Naboo crystal. Omos had a weakness for that, and iridescent Shalui ceramics.
"I could fit my apartment and my 10 neighbors in here."
"If we put fancy pottery in the corridors of my building, it wouldn't be there long," said Lim.
She cast an envious eye at a shimmering red vase that changed gradually to green and turquoise as the angle of the observer changed.
"Still, his insurance payments must hurt."
"Possessions are burdens," Jason smiled. "What you have can always be taken away, so wealth breeds fear."
"I'll willingly face that kind of fear, sir," Warut muttered. "And a nice big Soro subyacht. That would scare me very nicely."
The magnificent doors to Omos's apartment were engraved bronzium, an abstract design by one of Coruscant's top artists. Jason couldn't recall the name. It seemed a waste of talent when the doors were only seen by Omos, his inner circle, the housekeeping staff, and repair droids. Republica House had the kind of architecture and design that warranted public tours. Jason paused, marshaling his thoughts before pressing the bell. The troopers stood back and pulled down their visors, standard procedure for entering a building. For a moment, Jason thought they were going to stack either side of the door, but they were simply taking a pace backward, Lim keeping an eye on the corridor as a routine precaution. Omos answered the door himself. Jason knew he didn't have day and night close protection these days, but somehow he expected a droid or even a real butler to receive callers. The chief of state looked at him with a puzzled frown, and then at the two troopers.
"Good evening, Jason."
He stepped back and ushered them in.
"Wretched business, this shooting. I can't say I like Gedgen, but it shows how careful we have to be in our line of work.
He ambled down a long hallway that made the corridor outside look like a lower-level slum. The art on the walls was breathtaking, and most of it seemed to predate the Yuuzhan Vong invasion. Some gallery curator had a very secure hiding place then. At the end, Omas turned around.
Can I get you good people something to drink before we sit down?
Somehow it would have been so much easier if Omas had been hostile. Sir, said Jason, I'm arresting you in the name of the Galactic Alliance for activity likely to compromise the safety of the state. Omas frowned slightly, as if he hadn't heard right. He walked a few steps back along the passage where the downlighters cast pools of light on the velvet pile ruby carpet.
I beg your pardon?
You're under arrest, sir. We'll let you call your lawyer later, but right now it would be a good idea if you came with us. Omas gave a little snort of amusement.
Jason, my dear boy, this is Cal Omas you're talking to. Don't be such a prat. Arrest me? Arrest me?
Jason reached in his jacket and took out a datapad. Under the terms of the Emergency Measures Act, anyone, including heads of state, politicians, and any other individuals believed to be presenting a genuine risk to the security of the Galactic Alliance, can now be detained. That's a quote, sir. The amendment to the law to include heads of state came into effect at midnight, and you are a head of state. Omas looked stunned rather than alarmed. Jason was used to the GAG producing fear when they paid a visit, but amazement was disconcerting.
I saw that amendment come through on the notification circular yesterday,
Omas said, still quite casually conversational.
Good grief. You really did it, didn't you? You actually changed the law and planned this.
Sir,
am I allowed to know what risk I'm supposed to pose to my own state?
I can show you, sir, Jason said, and switched his datapad to the strip cam footage of the meeting with Gedgen. He queued it up and then held the pad so that Omas could see the screen. Please feel free to view it all, and then tell me if that's not you in the room, with two Alliance intel officers, the late Prime Minister, and his two Corsec protection officers. The look on Omas's face was priceless. Jason felt a flood of relief that he had finally made Omas realize that he was now a man with no future. Omas stared at the datapad and did indeed watch the whole meeting. Behind Jason, Wirut and Lim waited in patient silence.
Well,
said Omas,
what can I say?
Sergeant Wirut will accompany you to pack an overnight bag, Jason said. We'll take you out as discreetly as possible.
Secretly? Oh, I see.
No, sir. You're not going to disappear and turn up floating face down in some sewer. This will be conducted legally and openly. Omas stared impassively into Jason's face, and then looked past him at the two troopers. Jason could feel the man's fear, even though he looked perfectly at ease.
Sergeant, I do keep a bag packed for eventualities,
Omas said, almost smiling. There was nothing worse than a dignified detainee. Jason knew that within 24 hours, the barracks and the CSF bar would be full of gossip about how magnificently brave Omas had been. Wirut disappeared into the bedroom while Lim stood guard. Omas stepped a little closer to Jason, his face centimeters away, so close that his breath brushed Jason's skin like a hand.
You obnoxious, power-crazed, ludicrous little jerk,
he said sweetly, with the smile of an indulgent grandfather.
You had Gedgen killed too, didn't you?
Jason waited for him to spit in his face and still smile, but Omas conducted himself impeccably as he left. Wirut walked behind him, blaster visible but not jammed into the Chief of State's back, and Jason led the way. It was the longest, most awkward turbolift descent that Jason could imagine. When they reached the lobby, the security guard stared for a moment, put down his halluzine, and stood up.
Sir, what's happening?
Would you water the plants while I'm away, please?
Omas said pleasantly.
I'm afraid I'm under arrest.
There was a second GAG transport waiting outside. Wirut and Lim ushered Omos into it, then watched it speed away to GAG headquarters. Jason found that his hands were shaking. It was an effort to take out his comlink. "Admiral, it's done," he said. "Time for a public announcement." Wirut pushed back his visor and wiped his face with his glove.
"That," he said, "was the hardest thing I've ever done. Next time, sir, can I volunteer for snatching heavily armed Wookiee psychopaths? It'd be a lot easier on my nerves."
Wirut and Lim joked, but the arrest had crossed an emotional line for them, and it showed. Jason climbed into the speeder beside them and took a long route through the canyons of buildings, checking for signs that Coruscant, the heart of galactic democracy, had undergone a silent, bloodless, and thoroughly civilized military coup. Outside government buildings and bank headquarters, small groups of GA ground forces stood guard. It looked like no more than the routine public order precautions for festival nights, except the uniforms were not the blue of CSF.
"Weird,"
said Lim.
"Poor old Jory," Wirut sighed. "Poor kid. He was so keen to live up to his granddad."
Jason rubbed his eyes and realized he was in for another very long day, and the sun wasn't even up yet. "I won't forget that," he said. "I never will."
Senate Building, Coruscant.
Senator Gasil glanced at the holocams that transmitted Senate debates to every office, restaurant, and public area in the Senate building, then shook his head, eyes closed for a moment.
"Full house," he said. "You better have a good speech ready, Char. A really good one." Niathal adjusted her uniform and prepared to go out onto the Chief of State's platform to address the Senate. Things weren't playing out quite as she'd imagined. But then battles never did, and the political arena was as prone to the fog of war as any fleet engagement. Jason Solo, whom she expected to see strutting around the Senate, was keeping a low profile.
"It's temporary. It's for the duration of the war, and no ordinary citizens will notice an adverse impact on their lives,"
she said, rehearsing her key messages.
"Play a bit of Omos's clandestine meeting footage. Wave around the news of Mandalore and Roche, and everyone nods and says, 'Yes, indeed, Admiral, we live in dangerous times. Please do look after us as interim government, while the Chief of State's office is thoroughly investigated.'"
"I like Jason," Gasil said, suddenly very quiet. "But is he reliable these days?"
"Reliable for what?"
"I would never have authorized the Gedgen business. It was extreme."
"It's done. Corellia is wobbling a little, because their assorted lunatic fringes have given us a massive bonus by claiming they did it. Bothui has been brought up short, because they probably think we did it, but can't believe we had the nerve. And, well, I never thought I'd live to say this, but those ghastly little Mandalorian savages have been wonderfully helpful."
"Char, I don't want to worry you, but have you noticed their rearming? With Verpine Tech, too."
"I certainly have. Best news of the week. Gavil, will you run for the Chief of State's office in due course?"
"Will there be Chief of State?"
"I fully intend to return to elections and civil rule once the war is over."
"Then no, I won't. I'm fine not being where Omos was. If a thing can happen once, it can happen twice."
Gasil steered her toward the access to the floating platform.
"You need to watch your back with Jason."
"I know,"
she said.
"So I'm neutralizing him now. Start as you mean to go on."
Gasil followed her onto the platform. Niathal looked down at her boots as she stepped onto the platform, and when she looked up, the sheer scale of the Senate chamber unsettled her for a split second. It was a blessing. She knew her genuine dismay would come across as humble reluctance, There was nothing worse for a new military dictator than looking too keen. For a chamber of thousands of delegates, even with the recent secessions and defections, it was remarkably quiet. Her platform drifted serenely into the center of the massive chamber. She was looking into lights and shadows, generally unable to see faces. It was, in so many senses, a theatrical stage, complete with being blinded by footlights.
Gentle beings, I never expected to be addressing you in this way, and I find myself barely prepared for it. I greatly regret the need to stand on this platform, but the need has arisen. It will be a need for the shortest period possible, and apart from the temporary leadership of the GA, nothing else will change. I stress that. There is no curfew, no censorship, and none of the other trappings of martial law. Had Chief Omos been taken ill, I would be standing here anyway, and nobody would be panicking. What's happened overnight is no more constitutionally significant than that. I've merely exercised my responsibility as the Supreme Commander to deputize the Chief of State on the advice of the GA Security Services. As soon as the general security situation with the Confederacy is resolved, and I expect that to be within the short term, I'll step down and we'll hold elections for the Chief's office.
There wasn't a single lie in there. There was never any need to lie. She meant every word. There was simply information that the Senate didn't have. And everyone went through life with an incomplete picture of the galaxy anyway. One of the representatives of Kuat signaled to speak.
When you refer to the security services, Admiral, do you mean Alliance Intel or the GAG?
Nyathol wondered if Gisil had engineered the question, because it was so perfectly on cue.
I'd like to share some material with you,
she said,
so that you understand where the need to act arose.
It was possibly contempt of court to show the images of Omos's meeting with Gedgen. Evidence like that would prejudice his chance of a fair trial. But she had a shrewd idea that Omos wouldn't be cleared by a jury, returned to work with his reputation intact, and sue the GA for wrongful arrest. In his case, the arrest was verdict and sentence in one. She gestured for the images to be projected onto the viewing screen on each delegate's platform. It was gratifying to hear the faint exclamations of surprise as the scene played out, complete with Alliance intel officers. Nyathol displayed a little dignified pain at the moment of betrayal, when Durgedjan discussed how to remove her and Jason from their posts. The silence that followed was perfect.
So you'll understand why I felt I had to take advice from the GAG. Because Alliance Intel's objectivity may have been compromised by attendance at that meeting. And while it's not illegal for two heads of state at war to have discussions, it's unacceptable for them to plan the removal of a Supreme Commander without consulting the Security and Intelligence Council.
She hoped they noted that the chair of that council was sitting at her right hand. It was time for him to do his party piece. So she sat down and let Gisil have the floor.
I've got very little to add, Gisil said, except to say that I'm saddened to come to this. A word about the presence of GA troops on the streets alongside CSF officers. This is simply a precaution, in case the anarchic elements on Coruscant try to take advantage of the situation. As in any democracy, they have the right to exist and to speak. But if any of them attempt to capitalize on the situation, then the rule of law will be upheld.
Where there is no need for the anarchists to overthrow the government now, is there?
Said the delegate from Harun Kal.
You got there first.
With that in mind,
Nyathol continued,
I intend to ask Colonel Jason Solo to act as Joint Chief of State with me. A matter of checks and balances, so that the temporary power doesn't rest with one person, and one can subject the other to scrutiny.
She let the comment pass. Nobody else picked up on it. Gisil followed her back to her office. She sat down and felt the relief flutter.
Next, said Gisil,
and poured 2 cups of caff from the dispenser.
We have a breathing space while the senators panic about their share prices and the Corellian administration flounders like beach daggers.
Reopen the stock exchange,
she said.
I need to see the finance secretary at some point today to arrange for treasury intervention if the market panics again. I'm bringing Alliance Intel under GAG command and assigning Captain Gurdon to that.
Oh, classic.
And I want Omos's office sealed until further notice.
Gisil looked mildly surprised.
You're not moving in there?
I'm not, and neither is Jason. It smacks of enthusiasm for power rather than necessary duty. We seal it as it stands, which is best practice in terms of allowing CSF to preserve a potential crime scene.
She tapped the internal comlink code for Senate Building Maintenance into her desk keypad.
And nobody fights over whose chair it is.
Jedi Council Chamber.
It had been a long night, and the morning's news left Luke reeling. He looked at Mara across the chamber, noted that her injuries were largely healed, and wondered when she was going to be ready to talk to him about what was making her grind her teeth in her sleep. Something had got to her, and the fact that she was silent and not raging about it worried him. It meant it was more than Lumaya or Alima.
Makes you wonder what tomorrow might bring,
Kip said wearily, scratching his head with both hands as if he were shampooing his hair.
A bombshell with every bulletin.
I haven't always seen eye to eye with Omos, but I don't believe he's a security risk. Luke had never handled frustration well, and age hadn't mellowed that. So now we have 2 threats, an external war and an internal coup. Where do we concentrate our efforts?
Well, Nyathol is well within her rights to assume power under the circumstances,
Corin said.
So it's not exactly a coup. And much as we might not like it as citizens with a vote, as Jedi, we have no business interfering in that.
Can I say it? Kip asked. Because it's just staring us in the face and nobody's mentioning it.
Go on.
Jason. There, I said it. Jason. What in the name of the Force is going on here? Okay, maybe we should have taken him to task when he started kicking down doors with the GAG. Now, overnight, he's busted the Chief of State and taken over. Extreme? Out of control, my friends?
Has he actually declared himself Joint Chief of State? Personally?
Silgal looked up.
Admiral Nyathol announced it. We've heard nothing from Jason.
Then maybe it wasn't his idea. Luke looked at Mara to catch her eye, but she seemed in a world of her own. Mara?
Sorry.
She snapped to attention, blinking. I don't see Jason being dragged kicking and screaming to the big office somehow. Regardless of who came up with the idea, he's hardly rushed to decline the honor.
He's gone to ground, said Kip. We've been through a whole 24 hours of news bulletins without seeing him.
Time I went to see him, said Luke. I mean really see him. Nyathol sent a message saying she wants to maintain the good relationship between the Jedi Council and the Chief's office. I'm taking her up on that as soon as she can clear her schedule.
You know what? Kip said.
We're missing an important point. As Jedi, either we're players in GA politics or we're another instrument of the elected leadership, like the fleet. If we're the latter, then we might have our opinions, but we do as the legitimate leadership directs. If we're not, then we've got no more right to start interfering with the status quo than the monster raving anarchist party. Jason might be completely off the charts now, but he's not acting as a Jedi. He's an officer in the security forces who happens to be a Jedi. I'm seeing Nyathol, said Luke, slapping his palm down on the arm of his chair. And before we start griping about lack of action, think about this. When it was a matter of your not approving of Ben's involvement with the GAG, it was a choice between letting him carry on and hauling a teenage boy home. Now we're talking about action against what exactly? Stage our own coup?
Depose Nyathol? Confiscate Jason's lightsaber? I'm up for most things, I admit, but we have to think this through, because we might leave matters worse than before we started. Well, trying to talk him around is off the menu, said Mara. So I'm sticking with going after the irritant in this, Lumaya. But let's not forget that Omos didn't exactly behave sensibly, and Nyathol isn't in Lumaya's thrall. She's got her own agenda, and I don't get any sense of the dark side influencing that.
GAG Headquarters, Coruscant.
The worst thing about waking up that morning was the few seconds of blank comfort before remembering what had happened. And then the world collapsed again. Ben couldn't stop seeing Jory Lakoff everywhere he looked. He couldn't face staying at home. He needed the company of his friends, the people who missed Lakoff too. As he walked through the GAG security gates and the system accepted his identicard to open the blast-proof doors, every face in the corridor was Lakoff's. According to the roster display, Jason was on duty. The time code showed he'd been at headquarters since about 1 a.m. Ben couldn't feel his presence, but that didn't surprise him now. There was a time when Jason had hidden in the forest when he had to. Now he only showed himself when he seemed to feel it was necessary. Without thinking about it, Ben found himself shutting down too. As he walked down the corridor, the tiles still gleaming with spots of water because the cleaning droids were just meters ahead of him, he let himself merge with the matter and energy around him. The more he did it, the less he felt like he was in a trance, cut off from reality, and the more he felt like he was observing the world as it truly was, particles within particles. It gave him a fleeting feeling of serene clarity. It was a relief of a kind. At the top of the corridor, a pair of doors led to the holding cells. That area was always kept shut, but today there was a notice fixed on the wall next to it that read, "Top level clearances only." They were holding Chief Omos down there. It seemed surreal. Ben carried on toward Jason's office, and he could see as he rounded the corner that the doors were open. As usual, he couldn't feel Jason's presence, but he could hear him talking to someone.
"Who is it?" "Odd. I can't feel anybody else."
"You overplayed your hand," said Jason.
"You worry too much," said a woman's voice.
That was the point at which Ben realized something was very wrong. Only a Jedi could be there and not be sensed, or a Yuuzhan Vong, and they weren't exactly frequent visitors to the GAG headquarters. And the voice was somehow familiar, even though he couldn't place it. Keeping himself hidden in the Force, Ben edged silently along the corridor and stood as close to the open doors as he could. "You cut it too fine," Jason was saying. "There's being a decoy and there's being too clever, and you crossed that line. Are you recovered now?"
"Yes," said the woman's voice. "But it worked. It gave you the space to act without having her crawling all over your operation. She really thinks I want revenge for some daughter. I sometimes think your cover stories are too complex. And mind-rubbing Ben about Nalani isn't."
Ben recoiled. It was all he could do not to storm in.
"Jason, you did that?"
"He wouldn't understand why I had to do it," said Jason.
"And that's why he can't ever be your apprentice. Get rid of him. Find another one and stop wasting your time."
"Now there's my real problem."
"I can't help you there. Whoever it turns out to be, that's the Force's decision. You'll know very soon."
"Well, I dealt with Omos anyway. A clear path."
"Are you going to keep him here?"
"I thought house arrest might be more sensible in the long term. Republica House is easy to secure, and it makes us look like the good guys. People still like Omos."
"And here you are, Joint Chief of State."
"That way Nyathol thinks she can keep me quiet."
"Or under control."
"She's way too smart."
"Play nicely with her,
You need her to keep the military behind you.
You're such a strategist, Lumaya.
Lumaya?
Ben thought.
Lumaya?
Ben thought he'd misheard, or that his state of mind was making him hear what he wanted to hear, like Lakoff's voice. But he knew what he'd heard, and his first reaction wasn't one of fear or dread, but agonized embarrassment. He'd trusted Jason, and Jason had lied to him. He'd mind-rubbed him, and they were talking about him as if he was in the way. The fact that Jason was knowingly talking to a Sith as if they were old friends seemed to take second place to that. For all his denial, Jason knew Lumaya, and she could walk into GAG headquarters and just talk to him. Jason wasn't being conned by her. He was chatting casually with her about what he'd do next. Ben found himself scrabbling for excuses that would explain why Jason could be meeting with Lumaya and still be someone he could trust, someone with a perfectly good reason for it all.
Jason's a Jedi. He can't be in league with her. She's done something to him. Mind influenced him or something.
This woman had left his mother with a battered face. This woman was all he'd been taught to fear and avoid, and Jason was talking to her in his office, as bold as anything. Ben knew he had to tell someone, but he'd run out of people to trust. If Jason could be influenced like that, anyone could.
Except Mom. Mom wasn't in Lumaya's thrall, or she wouldn't have been in a fight with her.
Ben had to find her. He had to warn her. That morning, he felt like things couldn't possibly get any worse. And now, he knew they could.
Bavin Vassor Farm, Keldabe, Mandalore.
Too much hollow news is bad for you,
said the man standing in the doorway of the outbuilding. Fett had spotted him coming. It was hard not to. His multicolored, unmatched armor was extraordinary.
It's riveting,
he said, nodding in the direction of the monitor that he'd propped on the table. The news anchors and commentators had descended into a feeding frenzy about the bloodless coup.
Jason Solo, the boy who wants to be Vader when he grows up. He finally did it.
He probably looks in the mirror when he brushes his teeth and tells himself it's his destiny.
And you are?
Venku.
He didn't have a proper Keldabe accent. If anything, he sounded like he'd spent time on Kuat, and maybe Moonlist, too.
Sit down, Venku.
Fett gestured to the last remaining chair in the room.
Whatever it is, get it off your chest.
Venku still stood, ignoring the chair.
I came to tell you I'm relieved you decided to be a proper Mandalore. The Mando Ade are coming home. You probably don't notice much beyond your own existence, but this is your purpose.
Glad I could be more useful than a doorstop.
Which is why I'm also relieved to give you this.
Venku opened a pouch on his ammunition belt and placed a small, dark blue rectangular container on the table.
And don't mistake this for adulation or sentimentality. You owe your people. There will be someone along shortly to administer it. It's one of the local veterinarians, but if she can treat Nerf, she can treat you.
Venku turned toward the door as the word administer bored into Fett's skull.
Whoa there.
Venku glanced over his shoulder.
Don't try doing it yourself. It has to be inserted into the bone marrow, and that's going to hurt like you wouldn't believe. Let someone qualified do it. It'll still hurt, but they'll place it correctly.
So this was one of Jang's minions. Tell him we're even,
Fett said.
And thank him.
Venku started to say something, then stopped as if he was getting a message via his helmet. Fett tilted his own helmet in his lap so he could see the HUD display that was patched into Slave One's external security cam. A man tottered past the ship, clearly very old indeed from his gait, but still wearing full fighting armor, and paused to look at the ship. Then he moved out of cam range in the direction of the building. The old man appeared in the doorway, squeezed past Venku, and stared at Fett.
At least I live to see the day,
he said.
Sekui, Mandalore Gar Shabuir.
It wasn't the most polite greeting that Fett had ever received, but it was certainly the most relevant to a terminally ill man. It was the only possible way that warriors and mercenaries could greet each other. So, you're still alive. He'd worked out what Shabuir meant too, but he chose to take it as ribald affection rather than abuse. The old Mondo walked out with arthritic dignity, paused again at the door to stare at Fett, and went on his way.
You made his day, said Venku.
I shouldn't ask.
Then don't.
Venku sighed, then put his hands to his helmet to pop the seal. The rustle of fabric muffled his voice as he lifted the boucher.
Oh, all right then.
Boba Fett was looking into the face of a man perhaps 10 or 15 years younger than him. Dark hair with a liberal threading of gray, strong cheekbones, and the very darkest brown eyes.
I'm Venku, said the Mondo with the motley armor. But you probably know me better as Kadika. Interesting to meet you at last, Uncle Boba.
Osarian Papcaf, Coruscant.
I couldn't think who else to tell, Ben said. Or who else would listen to me if I did.
Mara wondered if he'd been crying about Lakoff or Jason's breathtaking betrayal. He'd been crying about something, though, and he was doing a reasonable job of disguising it.
I believe you, Ben. Maybe I did imagine it.
You didn't. No, he certainly couldn't imagine Lumaya having a friendly chat with Jason, dissecting their run of triumphs and deciding when Nyathol would no longer be useful. And discussing their lies. No daughter to avenge, and wiping out Ben's memory of what happened to Nalani. Ben had the useful ability to recall things he'd seen or heard with nearly complete accuracy. Mara's scalp had tightened and tingled as she heard her son, her precious kid, relating the exact words of that Sith cyborg and her accomplice, like an innocent possessed by a demon. Accomplice. Mara realized she'd shifted her position by a few parsecs. Not a vain, conceited, naive victim of a manipulative Sith. An accomplice. Jason wasn't weak-minded enough to fall that far and that fast, unless he wanted to.
I haven't told anyone else, and I don't want to, Ben whispered. Not Dad, either. I mean, you can tell him if you think he really needs to know, Mom. But I don't want to see the look on his face when he finds out what a moron I've been.
No more of a moron than the rest of us, sweetheart.
What are we going to do?
I won't ask you to do anything. Mara had let her drink get cold.
Ben, you have a choice. I told Jason that Lumaya was trying to kill you, and he was all innocence. So you knew about Zyost, then?
No, I don't know anything about Zyost, but you're going to tell me. Ben's face fell.
Jason sent me on a mission to Almania to recover an amulet that had some dark side power. I ended up on Zyost, and a ship attacked me, but I found a really weird vessel and got away.
Just like that?
It wasn't Lumaya, actually. It was a Bothan.
And how did you find this ship? Mara was trying to work out the scam.
Just parked, hatch open, with the key in the drive? Look, I'm not insane, but it spoke to me.
Oh. Mara had enough pieces in the puzzle now to see the rough shape of the picture that would emerge.
Spherical? Orange, like a big eye?
Ben's face drained completely of color.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
I worked out how to pilot it. It communicates through the Force.
And it's soaked in dark energies, I know. Go on.
I don't know how it works, but if you visualize what you want it to do, it does it. It sticks out parts of itself and forms them into cannons, all kinds of weapons.
Perfect. Perfect. Mara was getting a better picture by the second. Lumaya could think at the ship, and it would rush to do her bidding. Maybe even extrude a cable, whip it around Mara, drag her away, and nearly throttle her. It wasn't a droid. I got bushwhacked by a living ship. A Sith ship. So what happened to the ship between the time you found it and when I came across it the other day?
Where did you see it?
Hesperidium, when I caught up with Lumaya.
Ben's shoulders sagged. I flew it back to the Anakin Solo and handed it over to Jason.
Everything fell into place. The only pieces missing now were how she would put an end to this. But that was her specialty, and it could wait a while until she'd made sure Ben was safe.
Okay, I think you know how serious this is, she said. Their heads were almost touching over the table.
To the Osarians who used the restaurant and who spoke very little basic, they probably looked like mother and son having a tearful argument over homework and poor grades. They would never have guessed that it was about the fate of the galaxy.
Ben, will you accept a suggestion from me?
Anything, Mom. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Hey, I'm the one who should be sorry. But you're in real danger, and it's going to be more than you can handle. So I want you to be very cautious. I want you to behave like a coward for a change. Take no risks. In fact, I'd like you to report in sick and get as far away from Jason as you can until I get this fixed.
Ben nodded, grim. Very old eyes and a terribly young face.
I'll do it carefully, he said. So Jason doesn't realize I've found out that Lumaya is making him do all this.
Oh, sure she is. That's right, sweetheart.
I promise I won't hide in the Force from you, but I might have to do it to hide from her. Or even Jason, if she's got him so far under her control that he's taken over the government.
Sometimes you had to hear someone else say it to believe it.
Tell you what, said Mara, smiling. Why don't you show me how you do it? Then maybe I'll get a better sense of when you're just hiding and when not to worry.
Ben nodded, eyes downcast. There would be no holds barred now. Mara would use every means and weapon at her disposal, and there would be an end to this. They spent the rest of the day doing something that they hadn't done in a very long time, just wandering around the Sky Dome Botanical Gardens, talking and having fun. Or as much fun as could be had with a galactic civil war in progress and a military junta running the GA. The only evidence of the huge upheaval was that the CSF officer on patrol in the plaza had a Galactic Alliance Defense Force sergeant walking the beat with him. Apart from that, nobody seemed troubled. Mara wondered if all cataclysmic events in history were only noticed by a handful. Like Ben had said, prophetically, over lunch only days before, perhaps it had been that way during the Empire, too, and most people's lives were the same under Palpatine as they had been under the Republic. She didn't want to think it was true. Luke certainly didn't.
Come on, Mom,
Ben said.
Let's go find a nice spot on the lawns, and I'll teach you how to vanish.
They said it was a sure sign of imminent old age when your kids could teach you things. It was a simple thing, hiding in the Force. But then so was dieting, and not many people could knuckle down to that and make it work either. Ben was a remarkably patient teacher. After a couple of hours, she could manage a minute or two without needing to grab something solid.
I'm sorry about Lakoff, she said, putting her arm around him as they walked. I'm sorry I wasn't very kind to him. Sounds like he was one of the best.
He did it to make sure I got away. How do I live with that kind of sacrifice, Mom?
By making your life count, I think, so that his wasn't wasted.
It was the closest she'd ever felt to Ben, and probably the first time they'd really related as adults. It left her feeling profoundly happy. The irony wasn't lost on her that it was in the midst of some of the worst events and greatest threats they'd ever faced. Times like this made you painfully aware of what truly mattered.
Ben, you're probably going to see a side of me soon that isn't good old Mom. But I want you to know that whatever I do, however much of a stranger you think I become, I love you. And you're my heart, every fiber of it. Nothing matters to me more than you.
She stopped to hug him, and he hugged her back, rather than just submitting to the indignity as he usually did. It went on for a while.
You know why I believe you, Mom? Because you didn't tell me to trust you. Everyone else tells me to trust them, and that's usually the cue that I shouldn't.
Mara got another glimpse of the man her son would be, and the mother she'd been so far. It hadn't worked out so badly after all. She knew only too well what the stakes were now, and what she had to do.
Senate Building, Coruscant.
Jason's official airspeeder brought him up to the main Senate entrance. He could have entered the building by any number of more private platforms, but he had no intention of sneaking in via the back doors. Being seen counted for a lot, and he still had his heroic image to protect. A line of citizens waited outside the doors that admitted members of the public to the viewing galleries. Some just wanted to watch the day's business, but there was a small group who were clearly protesters. It wasn't just the Free Omos banner that the three of them were carrying among them. There was a taste of anger in the Force, vivid despite the permanent background of fear and uncertainty. "Drop me here," Jason said. "I'll walk." He stepped out of the speeder. "Good morning," Jason said. The group of protesters stared at him with a collective, slowly dawning, "Oh, it's really him" expression. He extended his hand to them, and one man actually shook it. "I just wanted to reassure you that Master Omos will get a scrupulously fair hearing. We've let him go home, too. When folks were worked up for yelling and seemed to want to be dragged away by CSF heavyweights, they were totally upended by having the object of their fury listen to them." Jason's patient smile met disoriented surprise. A couple of CSF officers began wandering across, probably expecting trouble, but Jason dissuaded them with a little Force influence, and they stopped a few meters away to observe. More important, though, was the HNE news droid, trundling around the Senate Plaza. Jason watched it approach in his peripheral vision.
"Doesn't matter how you dress it up,"
said the young woman holding one end of the Free Omos banner.
"The GA is being run now by the Supreme Commander and the head of the secret police, and nobody voted for you."
Jason managed an expression of slightly wounded innocence. "You're right. I didn't run for office, which is why I won't remain Joint Chief of State any longer than I have to. Would you like to see something inside the building?" The woman looked at him suspiciously.
"There's always a catch."
The news droid was right behind them now. "Your choice," Jason said. "I just want to show you the Chief of State's office. Anyone else want to come along?" Jason led a straggling group of protesters, day visitors, and the HNE droid through the glittering lobby and up in the turbolift to the floor of offices where the public was almost never allowed, the seat of the galactic government itself. Nyathol must have seen him come in on the security holocams because she was wandering around the lobby, clutching a couple of data pads. Jason acknowledged her with a smile and walked up to the carved double doors of the Chief of State's suite of offices. The doors were sealed, taped shut. The bright yellow tape with the CSF logo and the legend "Do Not Tamper" was purely cosmetic, but it made the point far better than the impregnable but invisible electronic lock. "That's Chief Omos's office," Jason said over the head of the HNE droid. He stood back casually to let it get a better shot of him, explaining earnestly to this random sample of the electorate. "It's for the elected head of state. It stays sealed until someone is elected to fill it. Neither I nor Admiral Nyathol is moved in. That matters very much to us." The little crowd muttered and oohed and awed. It was a perfect media moment. The protesters seemed lost for words, but Jason was anxious that they didn't look humiliated. "I hope we've reassured you, and I'm glad you feel you can raise this with us, because there's no point fighting a war if we can't behave as a democracy even when things get difficult." The jumpy security guards who decided to follow him showed the party out. Everyone went away either happy or at least diffused. Jason felt Nyathol's gaze boring a hole in him.
"Last time I saw anything that slick and oily was when the ocean leaked a whole lube reservoir over the aft weapons flat."
"Ah, but you are absolutely right to seal that office. Neither of us should have it."
"I believe in sharing everything."
"As do I," Jason said. Nyathol beckoned him to follow.
"I have Senator Gasil in my office, and the Senator for Mercana, Nav Ekat. We've hit a small snag in our new policy."
Ekat didn't look like a woman who'd had a restful night. She didn't wait for Jason to sit down before she launched into a tirade that had obviously been gathering steam long before he and Nyathol walked in.
I understand you're concentrating forces in the Corellian and Bothan sectors, she said, stabbing her finger at the holochart in the center of the meeting table. Where does that leave us?
Explain your concerns, said Jason.
The new treaty between Roche and Mandalore.
And you feel threatened by this?
Given the state of our relations with Roche, yes. Are you aware that we've been having a disagreement about export markets?
Gasil leaned forward.
Put another way, the Verpine are accusing Mercana of reverse engineering some of their most lucrative weapons command systems, breaching their patents, and selling cheap knockoffs to undermine their markets. Put another way, Verpine don't like healthy competition, said Akkad. Now they've signed a deal with Mandalore for mutual aid and technical collaboration. It's the Bugs and Thugs show.
Are you expecting this alliance to threaten your security directly? Jason asked. Because if the Verpine were seriously annoyed, they have plenty of military hardware to make their point without calling in Keldabe.
Verpine might make the stuff, she said, but they rarely use it in anger. The Mandalorians, on the other hand, treat warfare as a national sport. As a member of the GA, we expect support when attacked.
Roche is a neutral world, Jason pointed out. If you were attacked, we'd have to assess the situation, but I feel this has to be referred to the Interplanetary Civil Courts first.
So you're saying we're on our own?
Jason would play the nice officer today. Nyathol was doing a fine job of being the nasty one. I'm saying that you should try to resolve this dispute by other means rather than escalate straight to saber-rattling. But perhaps the presence of a GA squadron and frigate might make Roche more willing to sit down and discuss the matter again. Nyathol turned her head very slowly to stare at Jason. He knew the risk he was taking.
If we have spare resources, then we'll consider it.
Gasil watched Akkad stalk out, then shrugged.
So much for the Mandalorian threat making the little planets rush to our protective arms, Char.
They did rush,
Nyathol said.
And that's the problem. If we're seen deploying a Star Destroyer every time some member state has a local disagreement, we'll open the floodgates. Not that they're not starting to open already. Policy is to concentrate on breaking the big boys who won't play by GA rules, or we'll be putting out fires across the galaxy for decades to come.
Jason braced for impact.
And Colonel Solo, you will not commit fleet resources like that without discussing the matter with me.
I didn't commit anything. I just stated the obvious.
And I didn't agree to it either.
Wouldn't it be useful to have an excuse to wander out to the rim and take a look at those new Mandalorian fighters?
If they've built any yet.
I say commit a couple of flights if we can't spare a complete squadron. If we move one of the frigates out from Bothan space, that'll bring it within range of Mercana at a stretch.
Are you sure you want to provoke Mandalore? Gasil asked. It's got that extra personal dimension now. And the last thing we need is Fett making this a vendetta against the rest of the GA. His neutrality has been a bonus, to be honest.
I'm well aware that Fett has neither gone away nor forgotten his daughter, Jason said. But he's far too smart to waste his troops to fight a personal feud.
Luminous Gardens Spa, Drow, Corellian System.
So, still no new Prime Minister? Mara asked. You're taking a big risk coming here, said Leia. No, there's a triumvirate of the three main party leaders running Corellia until they find a new target. Sorry, I mean candidate. Two dead inside a few months tends to dampen the applicant's enthusiasm. Well, we score for efficiency. At least we can run the GA on two. The two walked around the colonnade of exclusive stores and beauty salons. I had to see you face to face. You don't want Jason to arrest you for setting foot on Coruscant, and you know he would. Where's Han? He's gone on an errand with Lando. Where's Luke? Seeing as it's just us girls talking, then I smell a delicate problem. There was no point tiptoeing around it. Mara had as much evidence as she needed. But this was Leia's son under discussion.
Jason,
she said.
Always is. I'm going to ask you something, Leia. And if you never want to speak to me again afterward, I'll understand. This isn't going to end in a punchline, is it? You're serious?
You have no idea how serious.
Then stop dragging it out.
Okay. Do you think Jason is susceptible enough to be controlled by Lumaya?
No,
Leia said.
He's stubborn, and he's his own man.
It was the last thing Mara wanted to hear. She wanted to hear that Jason was a good kid who went along with the others, who got into bad company but was a good boy at heart. She wanted a reason to go after evil Lumaya and rescue deluded Jason. Because that was easy. Black and white. Palatable.
Leia, I'm so sorry,
Mara thought. I'm going to have to stop Jason. I have to. I'm going to have to kill your son. Because that's the only way of stopping him now.
Senate Lobby, Coruscant.
There you are, said Mara, ambushing Jason as he stepped out of the turbolift. Glad I caught you. He registered genuine surprise, and that gave her more satisfaction than he'd ever know. No, he hadn't felt her presence when it mattered.
Thank you, Ben. Nice trick.
Hi, Aunt Mara. What can I do for you? Jason tried to do that act of dithering on the spot, the carefully calculated body language that said he really did want to stay and talk, but duty was dragging him away.
What an actor.
She could act too, but this wasn't the time for it. I'd love to catch up over a drink, he said. But it's late and I've got an appointment first thing tomorrow. Can we fix a time for when I'm free? Say in a couple of days?
It won't take long, Jason. It needs to be now.
Okay, he said. She steered him over to an alcove.
You don't fool me,
she said.
Not any longer, anyway.
He tried his baffled little boy grin.
What am I supposed to have done? Remember what I was.
You've lost me, Aunt Mara.
This is about Lumaya. It stops here and now. You've turned into something vile, and you're too smart to be conned into that even by her. Beyond dark. See, I've been both sides, and I know.
Well, I don't know what you mean. I really don't.
Wrong answer. I'll deal with Lumaya in due course. But I know what you've been doing. I don't buy the excuses that your poor parents make for you every cripping time. So I'm going to set you a test.
Mara, are you okay? You're not well, are you?
Don't even think about trying that one. If you acknowledge the terrible things you've done, and whatever's left of Leia's son is still functioning, then come with me right now to the temple. We'll get the whole council together and we'll deprogram you.
Jason put his hands in his pockets and looked down at the floor. He still had that silly grin on his face, but it was fading a little around the eyes. Mara, he said, with an exaggerated softness that made her want to punch him.
Mara, I think you're forgetting that I'm Joint Chief of State now, and I don't have time for this emotional outpouring, because whatever Ben's been telling you...
He was digging himself deeper into the pit. She'd really hoped he'd step back, and she knew she was just as stupid for hoping as she'd been for turning a blind eye to his darkness in the first place.
There's no Ben in this, Jason.
She stopped her finger a fraction short of jabbing him in the chest.
Leave Ben out of it. If you so much as breathe on him, I'll skin you alive. And that's not a euphemism. Last chance. Drop this Sith garbage now or take what's coming.
There. She'd said it. Sith. Jason's grin had vanished completely, and he looked like a total stranger. Good night, Aunt Mara, he said, and walked away.
Jason Solo's apartment building, Coruscant.
Lumaya had never had any problem with biding her time, but Jason was becoming too caught up in the administrative tedium of his new toy, the Galactic Alliance, for her comfort. And her instinct told her that the Force was restless for change.
It was late, past midnight, and he still wasn't back. Lumaya waited outside Jason's apartment building, taking in the glittering night and feeling the imminence of upheaval, like the oppressive air before a violent storm. Eventually, the doors opened, and Jason stood in the hallway, looking as if he had